What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out this very day, Wednesday, April 18th, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, because yesterday was tax day, and we're all feeling fine because we all did it. We all paid our taxes, and everything's fine.
Yeah, got our refund.
Totally fine.
Everything's fine.
Great.
Not under investigation or indictment.
Oh, my God. Wow, what? That went in a dark direction.
I said not.
Oh, okay, good. That went on a light direction.
Yeah.
Speaking of a light direction, we got a bunch of comic books to talk about, so let's jump right into it. This is the biggest issue of our lifetimes, you guys.
What? Comic books?
Action Comics number 1,000.
Holy shit. Has a comic ever gotten this high? And has Pete ever been this high reading a comic?
So this is a compilation of a bunch of Superman stories, including the debut of Brian Michael Bendis in the DC Universe, which is... surprisingly, I think probably the biggest deal about this book right now, other than the milestone.
Yes, but I would also argue not that big of a deal if you're just looking at the stories.
Sure. Well, let's talk about that. What did you guys think about this book? How did you feel about it? What stories did you like?
Well, do you want to talk about Bendis' thing first, since that's the biggest deal?
Well, I asked you, what did you think about the stories? What did you like? So that's one of the stories.
Guys,
so
Superman wouldn't want you to fight like this.
Superman would fuck shit up.
Okay, Bendis first. I felt like he was being pretty winky. Like I would expect him to make a debut. That's the way we say it. In a more of an earnest Superman way. Tell the Superman short story you've always wanted to tell. Instead, he calls out the red underwear, which I thought it was a little odd.
Yeah, the way that I understand it, and I could be wrong because I haven't done a ton of reading about it, but he signed on to do the Superman run, and then kind of at the last second, they're like, oh, hey, we're putting together Action Comics 1000. You want to be part of that? So he wrote this as sort of a preview prequel story.
Which, and I'm curious about the cliffhanger at the end of it. It's
right.
Just the two girls. I was like, it's like Bendis is over-Bendising to like make his...
It's very Bendis. It does feel like... well, I'm Bendis, and now I'm doing my thing at DC Comics, but I am very curious to see his run on Superman or Man of Steel, because I think that's where he's going to make his statement, his Superman
certainly
message.
On the more positive note, I really love the, no surprise, the Tom King story.
That was great. Hang on a second. I would like to get my 2 cents in on Bendis. First off, I was very happy Jim Lee did the art on it. I like, if that's the team that's going to be on, I'm very excited. But yeah, I thought it was a cool first swing at Superman, and I'm very excited for more. I didn't think it was too Bendis-y or too winky. I thought it was great.
All right, there we go. What did you think about the rest of the stories, Pete?
Anytime you're getting like kind of like a big anniversary issue, some of the stories you're going to like, some of them you're not. But I was impressed. I felt like people were coming to this with, kind of because it is a big event, they were bringing more of their A game, and I thought it was a really cool collection.
I also love the Scott Snyder story. I feel like the Scott Snyder and Tom King stories were great at sort of doing two nice counterpoints, mm-hmm. very personal takes on Superman. They were my favorites.
The one thing that I think was a little bit of a bummer to me, and this was emphasized by the Scott Snyder and the Tom King stories, is that there wasn't really an effort to show every aspect of the Superman mythos. Like, it got there, but it didn't feel quite as monumental as it could have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. Like, we didn't really see any of Jimmy Olsen or sort of the supporting cast. A little bit of Lois Lane. I did like the sort of retrospective where Superman was traveling through time and didn't understand how he was different.
That was great.
That was fun and interesting.
I'm always weirdly a fan of splash page stories where it's like, yeah, we got a bunch of artists to draw stuff, and then we went back and wrote a story to it.
But to me, that was definitely just like, hey, this is a jam session for the artist. It's not about the story.
Yep. Here, and this is going to come off super disingenuous on a podcast with three dudes.
Super disingenuous.
Yeah, but there were not a lot of women on this book. That's
oh my
all.
God, you withered as you were speaking.
Yeah, I did. No, it was kind of upsetting as I was flipping through. Like, you had a Louise Simonson story.
Which I like that. I like that story as well.
Jordi Belair did colors for one of the stories, I believe. There were a couple of assistant editors here and there. But the majority of the book was male, and it felt like as a celebration of where Superman has been, but where potentially it's going, there could have been a more of a room for female creators in this book.
Definitely agree with that. I think it showed, like you're saying, in the point of view just of the stories. Like, it was all about Superman doing stuff. We didn't get to see any other perspective.
Yeah. Anyway, going to be a great year for Superman regardless. Let's move on. Talk about another big event this week. Infinity Countdown number 2 for Marvel Comics. Continuing Marvel the countdown to infinity, which seems, you know, counterproductive. But this is mainly a Guardians of the Galaxy comic by Aaron Cooter and Jerry Dugan, and I like that.
Yes,
yeah. Pretty much it.
It definitely feels that way. It feels wild. There's so much going on in this book. And unlike sort of crossover setup books, it feels oddly specific to the Guardians. Like, usually, yeah. I would imagine we'd be touching on a ton of different heroes across the, all over the place, but we don't. We focus mostly on the Guardians, a little bit of Adam Warlock dealing with Ultron. This is fun. It feels more energized than other crossovers Marvel's done lately. So I like that.
I like it a lot, too. I mean, I wonder if that comes from Jerry Dugan, this being his first time at a big event. It also, and again, I have no knowledge of the inner workings of this, but it feels almost like, well, we already had our next Guardians of the Galaxy arc planned out. What if we gave it a prologue and an epilogue at the end of each issue that had nothing to do with what was going on, and then eventually we work up to something?
Yeah.
Which, again, is fine, because I liked what was going on the first page. The last bit with Hank Pym, Ultron, and Adam Warlock is crazy pants.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's fun stuff. What do you think, Pete?
I'm not liking this event so far.
Oh.
I just feel so... I don't know. I almost want, like, give me one whole issue with one group and then another whole issue with another group, because it just feels like just when I get in the swing of things, I'm pulled out of it. And it's also, I'm really having a tough time hearing Groot talk. It's weird.
It bothers
me.
You? I thought you might like it.
He's saying cool things. Yeah,
I
like the possibilities of it, but so far I've just been like, ugh. It just sounds like Vin Diesel talking. But I did like the kind of battle he had.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
I mean, more than anything, love Jerry Dugan, but Aaron Cooter's art is so good, and he's so suited for these enormous battle scenes. We've talked about this before on the podcast, but he makes everything so clear. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many different things going on at the same time on a page, but you always know where your eye is supposed to focus, where the action is going, and it's wonderful. I love
the Galactus spaceship. Very fun.
So much fun.
And that was a cool callback from
so
the first
good.
Time they used it. That was great.
Anyway, let's move on to talk about a new Image comic book, Skyward number 1. I really enjoy this book a lot. This is very high concept. The idea is that one day all the gravity disappears and we end up in a post-apocalyptic scenario where there's no gravity. I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought it was great.
I mean,
it
too,
was fun.
I wasn't an apocalypse. They just had to, like, change stuff.
Yeah, they had to really adjust.
I mean,
how
I'm sure a ton of people just floated right off the surface of the earth.
But it doesn't feel like a post-apocalyptic story. It feels like
like they made it work.
Yeah. Like, yeah, the society is happening. It's not a Walking Dead situation.
But I think what this book does nicely is the gravity disappears. We get to see immediately what happens as a man watches his wife die in front of him when she's hit by a flying car. And then we cut forward, I think, 15 years or
20
something.
Years.
20 years. So they've already gone through, I think, all the immediate Walking Dead post-apocalypse stuff. And like you're saying, they've figured out how to make the society work. It's not ideal, but it's the way they've lived their whole life.
Yeah, but I agree. It's fun. The art's really, really nice, clean, well laid out. It's a cool world. I like the way... what was the book we recently reviewed? I think Analog is what it was called, where it's putting us in a world and we get the rules right away, and it's like, oh, now we can just enjoy being here and see it play out.
Yeah, I thought for a first issue, this killed it, you know? The art, it's really set up the whole concept and sucked you into this world, and yeah, I'm excited about what we can do with this book, just because it's new. It's a really interesting concept.
Would you love a low G lifestyle?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I'm all high G, baby.
Yeah, you want super high grab.
Yeah, you want, like, crawling on the floor.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Speaking of deathly scenarios, let's move on and talk about Aliens Dust to Dust from Dark Horse Comics. Nothing freaks me out more in the entire world than the aliens, but I love the aliens comic books.
Really?
Yeah.
You're scared of the aliens in general.
I am scared of the aliens.
You can't watch the movies?
Have you watched the recent movies?
I've watched every single one of the movies. They terrify me.
No. I mean, I agree. The most recent movie I just watched, it's on HBO right now, and it is...
Good plug, by the way.
Hey, guys. HBO home box office. No one talks about that anymore, but it's home box office.
Yeah. It's not TV. It's HBO.
Exactly. Exactly. It's
guys,
movies.
Guys, would you stop just be walking commercials and get to
whoa,
your point?
Whoa, whoa, don't be a baller.
Oh, God. Were you going to say anything or just plug HBO?
Don't make him feel insecure.
Yeah, otherwise our friends at Silicon Valley are going to
All right, can I talk about it then if you're not going to?
Or
you're just gonna
Bill Hader's hitman in the titular character of Barry.
Oh, God.
Man, that's a real Game of Thrones.
So the movie, it is a very scary. The most recent movie is on HBO, and it is very scary. And yeah, it's like, it feels like the aliens will win no matter what. As soon as they appear, it's like, you're dead. And I feel like this book very much has that feeling, especially there's sense of dread to the whole book, because you know right at the top of the book that the mother has alien.
That's what drives me nuts, is I'm so familiar with this that as soon as I saw it on the face, I was like, she's dead. When's it going to come out of the chest? And the surprise was gone. It was just a countdown till that happened.
I don't know why I don't mind it. I mean, I guess maybe it's growing up reading all of these superhero comic books, but like the alien stories, with some exceptions, are all like...
Hang on, dude. Let me finish my sentence and then you come in and talk.
Is that how a conversation works?
This is like Veep. So I was saying that when... Because it's so familiar, the fact that... And if aliens exist on this world, we're reading this comic and a kid sees an alien, like, how do you not know how this works? And
so that pulled me.
That's what drives me nuts, is like, it's such a big thing. And if you're in a world where aliens exist, like, how do you not know about aliens?
But we are in a world. Like, I had one of those things jump on me right before I walked in here. I took it off and I'm fine. I'm fine. So
I looked at that. I was like, oh, look at that little guy. He's hugging his face.
Yeah. And so, like, what's the big deal?
I don't know. I've just seen it so many times. It kind of took the scary out of it, because I was like, all right, here we go.
What I liked about this book in particular, I understand what you're saying. What I was going to say before was that I feel like a lot of the alien stuff is just kind of taking the same elements, throwing it in a blender and seeing what's going to come out. But here, the pace is so breakneck. Like, it just hits the ground running from the beginning. Gabriel Hardman, who's writing it, does a great job ramping up that tension nonstop. And I think there is a fair amount of horror and tension you can get from knowing how things are going to go and watching characters that are well-defined going like, oh, God, don't do that. I know that's going to be wrong. Yep. Like, it's just like, it's the don't go up the stairs or don't go into the barn. You know, same sort of thing.
Don't go in the barn.
Never go into a barn.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like at this point, do something a little bit more different so that I can, because I wasn't invested because I knew what was happening.
Yeah, have the aliens fight Predator or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, something cool.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something else cool. Curse Words, number 13 from Image Comics. This is a great book. Soul. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, I know who wrote it. I think, like, at this point, we were talking about this on our live show with Charles Soule a little while ago, and they kind of hit a rhythm a few issues in where it didn't just become a goof-a-matron. It gave some heart. It figured out the characters. And now we're starting to get into a little bit more of what everybody's about, and I'm enjoying that a lot.
Yeah, it's a wild... It feels like this is... Charles writes so many books that this is the one where he can just sort of, like, cut loose a little bit and be like, yeah, these characters are going to go do this, and then this. It feels like a wild ride as opposed to some of his more meticulously paced books like Daredevil.
Yeah, I love this book. You can tell not only is the writer having fun, but the artist, but also, like... It was been bothering me that he hasn't cared about Margaret enough to really go after her, so I was happy that we finally dealt with this in this issue.
Yeah. So the main character, in case you're not reading it, is a guy named Wizard, who is a wizard. He was kind of a jerk, came to Earth trying to be a little bit better, but people and creatures from his homeworld keep coming through and kind of tempting him towards the dark side. Meanwhile, Margaret, who is his animal familiar, who also secretly is his daughter, and he doesn't know it, I guess.
Yeah, no.
It has been captured by a bunch of real-world wizards, and they're going after them. It's a lot of fun. Pick up this book. All right, let's move on.
Also, the Toad character was a little too close to home for me. There was
There's a great story about a toad in here.
Yeah,
who drinks too much?
Yeah, I was like, man,
that bothered you? Well, you have that pint glass that always keeps filling up.
Yeah, it seems like that sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh man, we're gonna lock you up. Let's move on and talk about Mr. Miracle number 8 from DC Comics.
Oh man,
here's another title that is just good every single issue.
Oh my God, this book, this issue. We talked about the last issue, I think, on the main podcast, and. The way it was about the birth of Mr. Miracle and Big Barda's baby, and this, we're jumping back and forth between Mr. Miracle being on the battlefield and swapping parenting roles with Big Barda, where he is at home taking care of the baby. And it is so good. Having a kid, it reminds me, it feels like the realness of having a kid and like the daily struggles of like not sleeping and going to a regular job with all the superheroic stuff laid over top of it. It is, if you're not reading this book, you are missing out on one of the best comics I've read.
Yeah, ever. I mean, it must be crazy for you. This is your exact scenario. Like, Mr. Miracle is going to war while Big Barda is taking care of the baby. You're here recording a podcast while your wife is taking care of the baby. Same thing.
Exactly. I mean, this is a battle. Let me be honest. Yeah. Not just because I quickly took that alien spider off my face and didn't infect me, so I'm totally fine.
Yeah,
but otherwise, this just the conversation is a real battle.
Yeah, what do you think? You've been back and forth about this book, Pete.
Well, yeah, and this issue was like, I obviously I don't have a kid, so I wasn't like really relating to this. But just the fact of like, we care and know so much about this couple that it's just so powerful. To me, though, I feel like other issues have been more powerful. This one was a little bit of a letdown, but it's still just so well done that I really enjoy it.
Think about it this way. Like, your copy, your VHS copy of Tommy Boy is sort of like your child. And if all of a sudden...
Let's not even go down this road.
I'm just saying, if that suddenly turned on in the middle of the night and made some noise and woke you up, you would have to stay up and watch the whole movie. I think you can identify with that.
You're right. You put it in that context.
This is what I'm saying.
Wow, it's a whole new world.
It's Tommy Boy is your boy.
Well, I want to talk about what I think you're picking up on, Pete, or at least what I picked up on this issue. Despite the fact that Mr. Miracle is getting this shit kicked out of him almost literally throughout this entire issue and is exhausted and being dragged out, it's kind of weirdly a lighter issue. Like, there's been some heavy, horrible stuff that's been going on. Yeah. But to Justin's point, what it does perfectly is it does capture the feeling of you're just in this walking dream constantly when you have a new baby. You don't know what's going on. You're going to one thing, and then you're at the other thing, and you're back, and you're forth, and you're back, and you're forth. It's great. This book is so good. Mitch Gerard's art is gorgeous.
So good.
It still ends up being kind of terrifying, even when non-terrifying things are happening, because you know in the background something's going to go wrong. I'll throw out something to you. Do you think the baby is real?
I'll tell you what. The way I noticed in this book, from the baby's perspective, is when we see the screen shift a little bit in a couple of the panels. So it makes me think the baby, I hope the baby is real, but maybe infected with anti-life.
Right.
I love the whole little Batman doll thing. That is...
Yeah, I love that Stan Lee is a character in this.
Funky Flash Man?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He says Excelsior.
All right, last one we're going to talk about from Marvel Comics. This is a surprisingly big one. Star Wars Poe Dameron, number 26. Not to be all Charles Soule the time.
Yeah, I guess so.
But this issue is a big deal
because... Get off Charles's dick, man.
Never.
I heard that Charles Soule is going to be the Soul Stone in the.
That's crazy. Yeah. So Poe Dameron jumps ahead after The Last Jedi. It takes place after the last scene. Poe Dameron, Rey, and Finn are all sitting together on the Millennium Falcon. And most of the story is taken up with Poe explaining how he got off of Jakku, as well as filling in a little bit of the details between what's been going on in the Poe Dameron series and The Force Awakens. But just in terms of like a continuity thing, I love that. I feel like I've talked about this quite a bit before, but one of the things that I loved reading as a kid was the Star Wars comics from Marvel. And what they used to do so well was they'd have these ongoing adventures, and then the movies would come out, and then they'd depict the movies in the comics. It would affect the characters of the comics, and then it would just keep going.
Right.
I think that was just with Empire Strikes Back. But basically, they were like, issue 81... Oh, they're fighting alien ducks somewhere. 82, 83, 84 is Empire Strikes Back. 85 takes place after Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And I love that that's happening here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. But, like, the fact that we had I don't need to relive the movie again. You know what I mean? Like, assume I saw the movie and I'm on board with happening, because it was like, hey, let me tell you what happened. And then I had to re-see what I've already seen. So, like, give me a cut to 5 minutes later. Yep. And that's what happened. Like, cool. Now, don't waste panels on shit I've already seen and lived and saw.
You well, lived it?
Oh, when you watch movies, you're kind of living.
Have you been reading the Poe Dameron series? Holy shit.
What?
Have you been reading the Poe Dameron?
On and off.
Okay, so not really.
Oh, well, shit.
Sure. I'm not trying to accuse you of something.
It seems like you are. I mean,
no, I'm not. Let me be honest. I haven't been reading it, so.
Okay, so the last arc has all been about Lor San Tekka, the guy who gives Poe the map at the beginning of Force Awakens.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just in terms of that...
We all know who Lor San Tekka is.
Come on. So the... Just in terms of the comic, like continuity wise, you got to finish up what's going on with Lor San Tekka because he's been a character in the comic. So I get what you're saying. I understand having to relive the movie, but at the same time, in the span of the comic book and the story that Charles Soule is telling, it makes sense.
I agree. I think we have to see that. Otherwise, just to tell a full story. Like if you got to see some stuff that connected the characters in the Chris Farley universe, you'd be super excited about that.
Yeah, but I've seen it so many times. Like, don't waste panels.
Yeah, but
energy.
Find out how Tommy Boy went to become Beverly Hills Ninja. We don't know how he got from there
and
to
then
there.
How did he end up living in a van down by the river?
Exactly. Oh, man. Like, connect those beats and then see it a little bit just so you know what's happening.
Yeah, and if you want to find out how that happened, tune into Westworld Sunday, April 22nd, only on HBO.
Oh, that's great stuff. Guys, if you'd like my stomach feels weird.
Oh, no.
If you'd like to...
I'm fine. I'm fine.
Sorry, you're going to die soon.
No, I'm fine. I just said I need to get some food.
If you would like to support our podcast and other podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. We do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the Pit Loft in New York, so come on by. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast and more. If anybody knows anything that what's going on... Oh, that's pretty
cute.
Yes,
it finally happened. Yes.
A new baby. Comic Book Club.